Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who met his wife while training for the 400 meters in Seattle and is eating gluten-free while lusting after bread, Dave Denniston.
Hello, my friends. This is Dave Denniston. Welcome back to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, a podcast dedicated to helping doctors like you slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle. Well, once again, we are doing another throwback episode from season one.
My name is Dave Denniston. Welcome to my latest podcast on the Freedom Formula for Physicians. Well, today we're going to focus on physician employment contracts. And as you know, one of my latest quests has been to connect and network with other professionals that serve physicians. And so today we're going to be chatting with John Apino. John obtained his BS in biology and chemistry with a pre-med focus. Well, he decided to switch careers a little bit and focus on business over medicine. And so he spent the last 15 years working in companies of all kinds of sizes and startups that have been in healthcare. And well, he completed his MBA in 2004 and launched his most recent company, Contract Diagnostics, in 2011. And he is so passionate about the education of physicians with regards to the non-clinical and business aspects of medicine. What I think is pretty cool about this company is, unlike a lot of other services, they offer a wide range of review packages with price points that start at only $200 with some flexible payment plans for residents and fellows, which we know they don't have a whole lot of cash usually. So we'll definitely get into that later. Well, anyhow, welcome, John.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Looking forward to being here.
All right, man. Well, hey, let's get going. Let's kick it off. Well, tell us a bit about yourself. I mentioned in the intro that you actually were a pre-med student and you changed gears. So why did you choose to focus on contracts and develop your company? How did this all happen?
Yeah, so it's been a long road to kind of get to where we are. You know, my mother was a nurse practitioner for, 35 years. And so I knew all the physicians in the smaller town I grew up in, South Dakota. And a lot of them dissuaded me from wanting to go into medicine. I wanted to be in emergency medicine physician. That's kind of where my heart was when I was in college and doing my undergrad. And a lot of them kind of thought maybe there'd be other opportunities that would be better than a career in medicine. And a lot of them kind of said stop and go back for computers. And this was back in the late 90s. And obviously when you get so far in college, you don't want to stop and go back. But I thought how can I finish up what I've started and then go out there and get some experiences that'll allow me to do what I'd like to do. So I finished my undergrad degree. I got a job with a big pharmaceutical company out of college. I did a variety of different tasks with them, including sales and marketing and contracting in Chicago and New York and a variety of different cities. And then one thing led to a different company, to a different company, to a couple of startups in the healthcare field. I've always loved working with physicians, and I've always had a good time finding ways to educate them and reach out to them and provide value to them in some form or another, because we understand their schedules, we understand the demands on them, and I think obviously having a customer base that is that are good communicators and intelligent and those kind of things are all advantageous to me as an entrepreneur. So I've always looked for ways to provide value back to the physician. And contract diagnostics is simply the creation of what was a market need. I've got a lot of friends and neighbors who are physicians, and as I talk with them and have a beer or wine with them on the weekend, and you kind of ask them, what keeps you up at night? What are your pain points? What are the things that you don't like about your job or about your career? And one thing that keeps coming up is, a lot with the residents and fellows especially, was, we don't have a very logical process for this whole contract review. We know we should get it done. We don't know if we can afford it. Do we call a regular lawyer in the yellow pages? Do we use a family friend? People want $3,000 or $4,000 or $300 an hour, and I don't have any money. I'm a resident. And so, our current project, Contract Diagnostics, which I think we're going to we're having a fantastic time working with these guys. We're going to run this thing, you know, for lots of years in the future. It basically came out of physicians' needs and what they told us they wanted. So we actually put a bunch of focus groups together, had them build the model, and we just found a way to make it happen. So, you know, they said we'd like this and this, and we put a package together around that. And, you know, and then we put obviously what price points we would need on things in order to make it, you know, worthwhile and profitable for our business. And we worked with them to kind of customize and,
well, and it's like, you know, the resident and the fellow, they're getting into practice and they're ready to go, right? You know, they've been in residency, they've been in medical student training for the last 7, 8, 9, 10 years, and it can be tempting just to want to sign the dotted line. I mean, just move on and tell us more about the company and your process, because when I think of contracts, I usually think of attorneys, like you mentioned. So do you guys have attorneys on staff, or how does this work for your company to review over legalese? What's the process like from start
to
finish?
Sure. So, you know, so we look at this process completely different, I think, than any other, you know, firm or you know, law firm or company in the nation. So, again, our feedback from some of our physicians who helped us build this model was I had a lawyer review it, and it was basically like a check the box, right? Yes, it's legal. I don't see any intrinsic flaws, and go ahead and sign it. But they didn't understand, you know, but the physician said, well, what is this, you know, I get paid $37.29 per RVU over 7,400 per year. What do these numbers mean? Is that good or is it bad, right? What are the averages in this area for these types of numbers? What's normal and what's standard? And to a lawyer who, you know, gets people out of speeding tickets and DUIs and does divorces and patent litigation and maybe does, you know, 3 physician contracts or 4 or 5 physician contracts a year, they maybe don't have a good handle on what normal and what standard is. Even the ones who maybe do more physician contracts, they do 100 a year, you know, they don't have access to some of the data that we have to provide information back to the physician. Again, physicians are, you know, they're information hungry clients. You know, they don't have the data to provide that to say, what is the going rate in this particular area? You know, what are the average RVU conversion rates? You know, what are the average collection times, and how should a compensation structure be modified? So our process is obviously we have legal, you know, in-house that reviews all the contracts from a legal perspective to make sure that there's no intrinsic flaws, there's nothing illegal, there's nothing that they need to be aware of from that perspective. However, we don't stop there like most other companies. We also have benefit advisors who can go through the benefit package. So, you know, what does your medical malpractice look like? You know, what is your medical insurance? What's your retirement plan look like? What are the vesting periods? What are good questions to ask the physician or to ask the group or the employer as they're looking at making this a potential, you know, job or career or opportunity? We also then have, obviously, the compensation analysis. So we'll go through the compensation structure in detail, analyze it, compare it to lots of different benchmarks that we have, and provide feedback on if it's generous, if it's underwhelming, if it should be modified, or if it should be questioned. And so we kind of, it's more holistic process than just a, yes, it's legal or it's illegal. It's more of a comprehensive, holistic review.
So tell me more, I'm being the numbers nerd that I am, I'm really interested in that data collection side. So is that something that you guys have collected in-house? You know, where are you getting data from to compare to these benchmarks?
Sure. So we spend thousands and thousands of dollars a year on survey data that's aggregated by major, you know, companies, Sullivan Cotter, MGMA. There's a variety of different surveys that are taken out there, and they sell that data to, you know, to large hospital systems. We actually purchase that here at Contract Diagnostics. You can imagine there's a little bit of survey bias in their data, and it's very valuable information and data that a lot of hospitals use to benchmark how they pay physicians. But we also keep our internal very robust, blinded data and that we've kept since we've opened up our doors. And so, you know, if somebody wants to know, well, what's the going rate for a neurologist in Iowa, we can tell you. If somebody wants to know what the going rate for a pulmonologist is in the Chicago Metro, we can tell you not only from the survey data that we can purchase, but also our internal data, which is raw and which is unbiased. And so we have access to both data, or, you know, multiple data sets, that we can kind of create a blended Again, depending on which package they purchase from us, we can put together a document that says, here's what the expectation should be. We can put, 25th percentile, mean, median, 75th percentile, 90th percentile for everything from a income perspective, a guaranteed salary perspective, a signing bonus, relocation amount, vacation time, CME dollars. If there's bonuses, what's the average percent of collections over certain thresholds or RVU payout. We can, student loan reimbursement is something that that people like to have in certain contracts. And so we can pull all of that data and we can let the physician know, hey, this is a very good offer or this is not a very good offer. One of the big things that we actually do see, and we spend a lot of time coaching to this, is the differences between male and female compensation. And, we have a lot of females that don't feel comfortable asking for more compensation. With our guidance and our data, they feel comfortable by asking those things, and we get phone calls all day from female physicians who are ecstatic because they were able to negotiate an additional $10,000 per year or $20,000 per year or $30,000 per year by just formulating a couple of questions based on our coaching.
Well, I know one of the big concerns that many of us have for physicians is where is compensation going, right? You got Medicare reimbursements possibly going down. That's been argued every year in Congress, and they just did a patch on that recently. Mm-hmm. But have you seen that data recently? Is compensation kind of flattening out? Is it going up a little bit? What does that look like the last couple of years?
So, yeah, it varies. It varies based on specialty. It varies based on, geographic region. It varies based on payer mix and what type of clinic or hospital you're looking at joining. But overall, we've seen, compensation trends to go down in most specialties. They're down more in some, like rheumatology, than they are in others. Interventional cardiology has taken a hit. But again, it depends a lot on the employer and how savvy they are with certain things regarding provider-based billing or a variety of different, strategies and tactics around appropriate ways to make sure that they're maximizing those revenue sources. So, again, smaller private practice versus large corporate employer, benefits and risks to both. But we do see, increases and decreases in compensation. And to that end, a lot of contracts actually say your compensation can change at any time.
Well, obviously, you've seen a lot of contracts. Just tell us a quick story. What's the worst contract that you've ever seen?
The worst. So, great question. We work with a lot of contracts, like you said, and there's a lot of them that just kind of they're standard. The same things need to be changed and modified. Yeah, some are boilerplate in all of them, right? And again, those still need to be reviewed and understood by the physician. It's an important document they're signing. It's still important that they spend a couple $100 to have somebody review it. As far as like the worst contract, we see challenging contracts in smaller, private practices who maybe have not had physician employees in the past. So the one physician, two physician, three physician practice, who's been kind of running for 10 or 20 years, and they're now looking at, maybe I'm going to retire in a few years, I'd like to bring on an associate. Sometimes those contracts are challenging because they've never done it before. They maybe tried to instead of doing it appropriately and spending quite a bit of money on having an attorney draft a reasonable document, they maybe try to cookie cutter something online, and it just doesn't work out well. And then when we start asking them questions, they don't know the answers, because they've never done it before. And sometimes they can be inflexible. And when we talk about partnership opportunities in 2 years or 3 years, they don't know the answers. And we did recently, and again, we've got a lot of like specifics, where physicians have actually turned down offers based on our work. We recently had a private practice opportunity that the physician was told it's a 2-year track to partnership. Here's what I'll pay you. The physician thought everything was fine. Liked the guy, thought it was a good practice, called us up, had us review it. We told them what we thought of the contract. I thought it was a fine contract, but there's a lot of details missing. The physician actually had us reach out to the practice and negotiate it for him. And at the end of the day, what we found out was the physician was extremely inflexible. At the end of 2 years, they were going to apply what we felt was a ridiculous multiple to the profits of the business as far as a buy-in, and then they weren't even going to make them 50-50 partners. They were always going to be a 70-30 partner, and so they would never have a true voice. And so, you know, the physician had, he just assumed that, you know, time served, you would integrate and be a 50-50 partner, and all of a sudden he looks like going, wait a minute, I got to shell out $600,000 for 30% of this business, and I'm still going to be a minority shareholder, so I'll never really have a true say in decision. And, you know, sometimes we work with these taxes and they're just inflexible.
Well, I think that's a very interesting. I mean, you can have both sides of the coin with it. I had a client that's recently was a big public hospital, a fellow transitioning the practice, and they had recently paid an attorney that was reviewing and negotiating their contract. And supposedly this attorney specialized in contracts in this area with this employer. And lo and behold, negotiations started, and it ended really, really quickly. There was no negotiation. And she and her husband were like, we just paid $3,000 for this. We got $5,000 out of it. So it turned out okay, but they were ticked because it seemed to be like this lady would promise the moon. And my client really seemed to expect a lot more. And I'm not sure if the attorney didn't know what they were doing, or the employer had gotten burned recently, or my client just had unrealistic expectations. So you tell me, what do you think are realistic expectations that physicians should have when they step to the negotiating table?
Yeah, well, I think it depends on, you know, what things are set up initially and how it's worded. I mean, you know, because we do so many contracts, we can say, I would like this changed. I think it's a 5% chance that they change it. And so we do a good job of setting the expectation with our clients, saying, you know, if I were you, I would ask for this, or if you pay us to negotiate it, we will ask for this, but I don't think they're probably going to give on it. But we've maybe got some creative alternatives that we can provide, because, again, we do this a lot. We can provide, you know, multiple different ideas, suggestions, revisions, alternatives. But sometimes they just are unwilling to change and to modify contracts. And especially like in a local market, a lot of the attorneys, we have physicians call us quite a bit, and they'll say, I call local attorneys, and, you know, and I ask them, do you have any conflicts of interest? Have you ever worked with this account before? And if they've ever taken money from that employer to do a job, they've got a conflict. And they say it's actually fairly difficult to find lawyers in a lot of towns that don't have that conflict. They haven't worked with the hospital in one way or another, meaning taking the hospital's money. And so now all of a sudden you've got kind of a conflict on their behalf. And then we've worked with other accounts where we've been paid money by our client to negotiate, and we've been kind of told, there's really nothing to negotiate. Now, just because they won't change something in the contract doesn't mean that it's not important to have us maybe do the negotiation or get us involved. Sometimes it's not just about, changing from one thing to the next. It's about having the right questions to ask around expectations, maybe things like schedule or how the retirement plan may look, or, you know, what happens upon termination or the non-compete, and just discussing it, not maybe, you know, making demands on how it should be changed and modified, but just having a discussion around, you know, why a certain provision is in there. And sometimes it just becomes, you know, more of a fact-finding mission and a clarity than it does, we want A substituted for B, so to speak. But.
Well, let me switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about one of my favorite subjects. Okay, my favorite subject, money. And one of the subjects that comes up a lot with residents and fellows, you and I were talking back and forth on email a while back, is the tremendous level of debt that many physicians have. How willing do you think employers are today to include some sort of debt forgiveness bonus or structure in debt plans outside of some of the public programs that are available?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So, you know, I don't know when we track this, but I don't have the data in front of me, but I want to say, you know, I mean, it's a small percent as far as, employers that provide tuition reimbursement or loan assistance. And they're more typically in some of those kind of, you know, more rural, more hard to serve areas. Some are the government programs, like you said, and some are just the hospital providing recruitment incentives to get physicians there. If you want to go work in Chicago or Dallas or Austin or the Northeast in general, it's just really hard to find. I mean, they've got a lot of physicians. who want that job. So they don't have to offer some of those incentives like they do maybe in some other places in the Midwest or more rural communities. And so, you know, we do see it. We see it range from, you know, from $10,000 per year to, you know, $400,000 in aggregate over, you know, a 5 or a 10 year period. So it just depends on the individual situation. But
are you aware of any particular areas, John, that maybe docs should be checking out? You mentioned some rural areas. Do you have any specific regions that you've seen some really awesome incentives from employers in?
You know, I mean, we continue to see them, you know, throughout the Midwest, you know, South Dakota, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri, you know, certain parts of Texas, Alabama. You know, we see, you know, some of the rural parts of the Southeast. We'll see some of those, you know, from a financial perspective, we'll see some of those really good deals, you know. But, I mean, it's just so variable, you know. I mean, we'll deal with, you know, two different private practices for ophthalmology, or you know, who have you know, cornea or retina specialists in California, and their businesses are so completely different, and their profitability is so completely different, and what they're able to offer a new physician is just drastically different. And you know, again, it just shows that, you know, it's not just about setting up a practice and seeing the patients that come in the door. There's an art to, you know, how you, you know, deal and contract with payers and pay and hire staff and, you know, and do billing and coding. And
well,
so,
and I would encourage anyone who's listening to think about, you know, if the employer can offer an incentive like that in the same area, is there a state program? You know, why not double up if there's some sort of rural program on top of the employer offering money? Because if you're there four years, maybe you could be out of debt completely.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know the power of, you know, of not having, you know, monthly payments and debt as a young, good earner physician for the next 20 or 30 years on what that can do for, you know, to free up, you know, capital for various expenses or for investing into the future or for a variety of things. So it can be very valuable too, I agree.
For sure. Well, what about in terms of as people get into practice, what have you seen or heard from some of your clientele? What are some of the biggest financial pitfalls that they're getting trapped into as they're transitioning out to practice?
The biggest financial pitfalls, I think it's just not being I think in general it's not being financially savvy, you know. It's not knowing, you know, I mean, their income goes up significantly. It's not having a plan, I think, number one, with what to do, you know, with their increased, you know, financial, you know, windfalls, if you will, as far as monthly paychecks and bonuses. And yeah, do you pay off debt? Do you invest? Do you buy a new house and a new car? And I think they get this kind of, you know, sometimes they don't have a good idea and a plan as far as how to move, you know, this process forward as an attending with a much, much more healthy salary. You know? So I think that's kind of global, right? But from a contract perspective, I mean, I think it's the same thing, right? How do you make sure that the money that's coming in is the money that you've earned? And how do you know that no matter when the contract ends or terminates, you're going to receive that money, again, based on how the contract is structured? And then how do you have a good expectation around, you know, that income? So if your base salary is $200,000, how do you set up a budget for your monthly spend at $200K? We had a physician who was a two-year OB doctor in the D.C. area and was transitioning down to Miami South Beach. And they had to tail out of their policy in D.C. They didn't offer a policy in Miami because they didn't carry malpractice insurance down there for a variety of reasons. And so she had to tail out of her tail. She was 2 years out of training. You know, OB in D.C. makes okay money, but not tremendous money to put a ton of money in the bank every month. But her tail insurance that she had to pay was $184,000.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay? So 2 years out of training, still with student loan, and you can't finance tail insurance, right? I mean, there's no hammer to take back. They can't take it back if you don't make your payment. And so, you know, you look at this, you go, okay, maybe if they've been financially astute, they've invested a little bit, they've put some money in the bank, and they maybe have, you know, 30,000 liquid, maybe 40,000 liquid, and all of a sudden you get a bill for 180 grand. And, you know, that obviously dramatically changes the trajectory of your financial future. And, you know, and the physician didn't even have a clue until they involved us with what their obligations were. And again, that would be, you know, kind of on the on the uh, on the extreme end of a catastrophe that they didn't see coming. But we see everything in between. I think number one, having a plan. Number two, understanding what the contract says with regards to financial expectation. And then making sure that you're sticking to, that plan, I think is the most important thing when it comes to, major pitfalls, if you will.
So what was the solution with this gal, where she got this big bill? Did the employer end up making up for some of that because they didn't have malpractice, just try to find a new employer? Or what was the resolution to that story?
So a couple things. One, I think she could have, if she would have involved us, 2 years prior, I don't know that we would have been able to make the situation go away, but I think we would have been able to make it much more palatable. Okay, I think we probably could have saved her at least 50 or maybe even 100,000 if she would have got us involved on the front end. But involving us on the back end was better than too late. So we involved the malpractice broker that we consult with. We shopped the tail. We did a negotiation of her way out, I think we ended up saving her maybe 30 or 35,000. And so we helped her out a little bit. It still wasn't what she needed, but at the end of the day, she just had to friends and family and bank notes to get the money in. And she just had to pay it. Maybe we couldn't have made it all go away if she would have engaged us on the front end, but she would have had a reasonable expectation, and she would have been able to financially plan for this event, and she wouldn't have been blindsided on a Friday afternoon with, oh, by the way, you got to pay $180,000. Talk about a stressful weekend, right? I don't know that there was maybe an easy solution.
Cool. Well, we just have a couple minutes left and just want to try and wrap up. And one of the important things that I like to point people towards are resources, and specifically regarding contracts. If people wanted to check out some residents or fellows or other physicians out there, some good books or some videos online, where are some areas you could point people towards that think would be good to educate them on regarding physician contracts?
Yeah, one of the major job publications, Practice Link, they have at least one or two print editions and online editions of their magazine every year that talk about contract. And that's a great website for them to go to and read through those older editions. They interview us a lot for
those.
Yep, Practice Link, yep. PracticeLink.com is their website. They can find all the links. I believe they're on our website, but I'm not sure. Two different interviews that we've done for them, different articles that we've read. We have a blog on our website that we're blogging more and more about various topics. That's a great place to go. There's a variety of books on Amazon that they can buy, but the AMA actually has a really nice kind of a PDF on their website. And it just kind of talks about, here's how to look at a contract. Here's some things to kind of keep an eye out for. Of course, they recommend, this does not make you a contract expert because you've read this. They suggest that you engage a professional. But it gives a really nice overview as far as, here's a couple of things to keep an eye out for. Here's a couple of things to maybe request if they're not already in the contract. And so the AMA is a great resource. And I forget what it's called, but I think if you just go to the AMA website and type in contracts or physician contracts, it pulled up a really nice kind of ebook, a PDF file that you can download. There's no charge for it. That's a great resource as well. And obviously, picking up the phone and calling us. We don't charge people to talk to us on the phone about their situation. Definitely welcome anybody to check us out online at contractdiagnostics.com, or our 800 number is 888-574-5526, and they can always find us that way and just get us on the phone and say, look, here's my situation. What do you suggest that I do? And we love taking calls. And like I said at the beginning of our call, we love, providing value to physicians and educating them in any way that we can. And if that means that they engage us for a package and we make money on that, that's great. If it means that we just have another physician out there who thinks highly of our firm and we have a 20-minute or a 30-minute conversation with them and we don't make any money today, that's perfectly fine as well. So we encourage people to reach out to us and touch base and tell their stories and see if it makes sense to engage us and to work with us or if we don't even feel it's necessary. So,
Well, I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast about pricing. So I want you to just real quickly, just give us a minute here. Tell us about your pricing structure, which I think is real unique, and how you work with residents and fellows.
Yeah, so we've got a couple different packages. They start as cheap as $200. Our full negotiation costs $1,700. And then we've got a couple different packages in between there. One is just kind of a basic review where we do a really cool proprietary document for the physician where we redraft the contract into plain English so they can actually read through our document and they can understand everything that's in the contract. They know what questions they should ask and everything else. We actually run over that with them on the phone before you know they engage the employer in a discussion. We have an upgrade to that. It's called the Advanced Review. It happens to be the most popular package that we have. It's, I think, 81 or 83% of the reviews that we do. So, I mean, nearly everyone chooses it. We do that. You know, we do the triple review like we talked about before, the legal, compensation, and benefit review. We redraft it into our proprietary document. We provide them with the full compensation sheet that shows them all the different details and figures around compensation. And we then provide them unlimited access to us. So it's not just one session on the phone. They can email us as much as they'd like for a year. They can call us back as much as they'd like for a year. If they change the contract based on our guidance and recommendations, there's no charge for us to re-review that. That's kind of one of the reasons I think that's our most popular package is because you get all of those things, but you also have a very nice price point at $700. But what we do for residents and fellows on that advanced review is we actually cut it up a little bit. We say, look, if cash flows on a monthly basis are a little tight right now, if you'd like, you can do $200 down, and then the remaining $500 is due after you start your position. So, we believe it or not, we do allow some people to wait 7 months or 8 months to pay us, that remaining $500. So far, we've been very fortunate that we've had physicians who have been prompt with their other payments, and we haven't had to track too many people down. But I think it's a function of the client that we work with, and the physician's just overall mentality. So that's our FlexPay plan. We do offer that to residents and fellows, and we have a lot of them that take us up on that offer. And then our upgrade to the from the advanced review to the negotiation review is becoming more and more popular. It adds $1,000, so it's $1,700 total. And we basically take all the discussions and all the negotiations off the physician's plate and do everything for them. So, based on our discussion earlier on, is it even necessary? We can make that decision with the physician at the time that we do the review. There may not be that much to change, or it may be what we feel will be an inflexible employer. So maybe their additional monies would be better spent somewhere else. But that's a decision that we can usually make together after we've done the advanced review. So.
Awesome. Well, I think that's so neat. So I think especially for residents, they don't want to put a whole lot of money out there. So I think having those different options at reasonable price points is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for being with us, John. And if people have more questions, how can they get in contact with you?
So they can visit our website, contractdiagnostics.com. They can call me directly. My office line is 816-288-3312. And again, they can just call the front desk. It's 888-574-5526. And we have a contact us form on our website that we typically get back to people in a pretty quick fashion. And, obviously people answer the phones if they call anytime during regular business hours. But we'd love to help anybody out that's listening, and whether that's actually working with them on a client basis or whether that's just listening to their story and providing some recommendations based on our experience. Either way, we'd love to provide value to your viewers and listenership and clients and everything else. So we appreciate the opportunity to be with you today, Dave.
All right. Well, sweet deal. Well, if you are a physician or you're someone else servicing physicians and want to tell your story or grappling with tough issues like this and want to get up on the soapbox for a few minutes, I'd love to share it too in the next Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. Make sure to check it out at daviddeniston.com/physicians or freedomformulapodcast.com. Or you can contact me at dave@daviddeniston.com. For the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, this is Dave Denniston. Thank you so much for joining us, and make sure to subscribe and check in again soon.